It can help answer questions, draft documents, and perform automated searches. But artificial intelligence will only enhance government service and operations if applied carefully. That's one finding by the Ash Center at the Harvard Kennedy School. Hila Mayer is an Ash Center Fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and works in market development at IBM. She talked about the research with Tom Temin.
In your report, you set out a number of use cases for artificial intelligence. And I think for federal managers thinking about this, they might be wondering, how could I even use this technology? So what are some of the top use cases?
I think government has a great opportunity with AI when it comes to the unsexy, if you will, but vital work that government uses to run. Those are the administrative, procedural, and data-intensive tasks. So in my report, I sought to understand the types of problems that are appropriate for AI applications, such as if you have a resource allocation issue, AI might help you speed up task completion. If you have a shortage of experts, AI can also help answer the more basic question to free up time for those experts to solve the issues that are more complicated and require their insights.
So it won't cause world peace to suddenly break out or end poverty, but it's something that can help with daily operations of things that are done by hand now?
Exactly. And Deloitte actually estimated that automation of the federal government as employee tasks could save between 96.7 million and 1.2 billion hours annually. And that's a huge cost saving. So I think if you look at the automation of those unsexy tasks that are still vital to make government run, you have a really great opportunity to improve the citizen experience without losing a lot of jobs or trying to apply AI to issues that it's not apt to solve.
Well, give us an example of what might be something that a citizen would try to do that artificial intelligence could help the government do accurately.
Sure. Well, one of the examples that I love is we're seeing the rise of chatbots in our personal experience with vendors. So whether you're communicating with your telco company or you're on Facebook Messenger trying to order food, there's the rise of chatbots to help you do that. And we're starting to see the application of chatbots in the government as well. So a citizen might try to be reaching a government office to answer a basic question, but for whatever reason, the website or other resources aren't getting the question answered for them. They can speak with a chatbot who can search the site and get that answer to them. And if it's a more complicated question, the AI can route that question to a human expert to help. And you're seeing that both for basic things like password support, all the way to a chatbot that was recently created to help refugees with their applications to come into the country.
When someone is using a chat box, who are they chatting with? Or are they chatting with a machine?
They are chatting with a machine. And one of the issues that government and private sector in general needs to be aware of is that it's the best practice to let the person know that they are chatting with a machine and not a human. Otherwise, the humans could be deceived. Frequently, these chatbots are named things like Siri and Alexa. And those are physical manifestations, so humans tend to know that that's on their machine. But if they're on a website of a government office, for example, and they're chatting with Emily, Emily could be a chatbot or it could be a human customer support person. And so it's good for governments and private sector to just let the person know on the other end you're speaking with a machine and you have an option to also chat with a human.
Kind of like when you're dealing with, say, an airline and they ask you what you want to do and where you might be flying or the date of flight. They have voice recognition on the other end, but clearly it's a machine you're talking with.
Exactly. You know, IVR, which is the voice system that you're speaking of, has been around for a long time, and AI has been around for a long time as well. But what makes AI different than IVR systems is that it has machine learning applied to it. So the system can learn continuously and improve over time. So it'll learn what the best answers to the most frequently asked questions are and answer them better, whereas many IVR systems still don't have that capability to understand, learn, and improve continuously.
Sure. Well, we know the airlines certainly don't improve over time. We're speaking with IBM's Hila Mayer. She's a Technology and Democracy Fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School. And I wanted to ask you how agencies go about buying artificial intelligence. How do you acquire this for your agency? Because I don't think there's a line item called artificial intelligence on any of the big IDIQ contracts.
Sure. Well, Well, it's a great question. It's not something that I looked into too deeply into my report, but this will typically come from procurement, and it's likely to come out of the CIO budget, especially because AI is very data intensive.
And in your report, you mentioned there are six basic strategies agencies should follow when it comes to doing artificial intelligence. Review those for us.
Sure. So I spoke about six ways that governments could navigate with AI. And the first is that they should make AI part of a goal-based and citizen-centric program. And so this is one of the most important things. The question should not be how will we use AI to solve a problem, but instead, what problem are we trying to solve? And if AI is the right answer to how can we solve that specific problem, then it's a great use case. Otherwise, just because it's a cool new tool, doesn't mean that it should be applied to every problem, like you mentioned, world peace, for example. The second thing I recommend is getting citizen input. That's really important because frequently with government, you're also using citizen data. The third is to build upon existing resources. Because AI is data intensive, this is important because if you're trying to get in early on AI, your existing resources are more likely to have the data necessary to get an AI system up and running. The fourth thing that I recommend is to be data prepared and to tread very carefully with privacy. And of course, you can imagine that this is a huge issue and there's a lot of risks involved. And so being aware of those data concerns, like incorrect data traveling and biasing the AI system, is really important. The fifth thing I recommend, along with those data risks, is to mitigate ethical risks and to do that by avoiding AI decision-making. So because machine learning is still susceptible to bias, just like humans are, we have to make sure that AI systems in the government especially aren't often running on their own, making decisions that could impact a human life.
They couldn't replace, for example, an administrative law judge.
Exactly, exactly. And there were experiments of AI in the judicial system that were coming up with some unpleasant results that greatly impacted, you know, human life. And so that's something to be aware of. And then along those lines, the sixth thing that I recommend is augmenting employees, not replacing them. So early case studies have shown that AI actually works best when they're augmenting humans, not replacing them. So they work better hand in hand as opposed to using AI as a way to reduce headcount.